From WBEZ Chicago, I'm Natalie Moore, and this is Making Stories Without End. Here, I take you on a journey to learn about daytime soap operas and their broad reach on television. Many people don't know that the serial started right here in Chicago. Join me as we talk about the social impact, history, and lasting legacy of television's unique immersive storytelling. Listen, Victor Newman has a hold on black soap opera fans, especially women.
I don't care how long it takes, and I don't care how much it costs. But when I'm through with you, Jack Irwin, you'll have nothing. You'll be nothing.
For more than 40 years, Eric Braeden has played this leading man on The Young and the Restless. It's the number one daytime drama, more than 3 million viewers a week. And it's number one among African-American viewers. Victor Newman, debonair, swagger, the distinctive accent. He takes no shit, pounds enemies.
I'm Victor Newman. I'm the Victor Newman. Do you understand that? I've made my own life. I'm wealthy beyond your wildest dreams.
There are so many hilarious memes about black grannies, grandmas, and aunties swooning over him all these years. He is their soap boyfriend. The Victor Newman raised a generation of kids homesick from school or staying with their grandmamas during summer break. Like I said, this white man has a hold on the black community. Eric Braeden further endears himself by going viral on black Twitter because he is not afraid to clap back against racists on X. We imagine hearing the tweets in Victor Newman's voice. There is such a thing as black soap Twitter. Makes sense. One network official says black women over-index as soap watchers. Hello, that would be me. Black folk have an intimate and complicated relationship with soaps. I've noticed although we don't always see ourselves on soaps, a lot of us love soaps. Over the decades, black characters have been relegated to supporting roles, but they have also been front and center in pioneering roles. In the 1980s, All My Children's Jesse and Angie were the first black super couple on daytime, a young couple doing whatever they could to be together. It was a big deal to see black love front and center.
Well, it might turn you off, you know?
What do you mean?
Well, it's just this dinky little tired room with tired decorations everywhere. I mean, they got people getting married one right after another, like some kind of assembly line, you know?
Jesse, I wouldn't care if we got married in a phone booth.
That led me to wonder, what is it like to be black in the soap opera industry? How do these writers and actors navigate the industry? In this episode, I sat down with the people who have been in the trenches, black writers and actors who know what it's like to be in the big soap opera world. It can always be better, but there is a story to tell about black people on this canvas occupying these worlds. Along the way, I learned some soap history that connects to my family on the south side of Chicago. Soap operas are about core families, often in a Midwestern town. The original white families on the remaining soaps remain today. The children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren are part of that core. Soap creator Erna Phillips made families and intergenerational relationships the nucleus of the genre. As daytime serials pushed boundaries around abortion, divorce, affairs, and health, Phillips wanted to address race relations in the 1960s. She said Procter & Gamble, owners and sponsors of her programs, didn't want her to tell race stories beyond background characters. While reporting on this podcast, I read that a woman named Mickey Grant was the first black contract player on a soap, meaning she was on regularly and not an extra. It was on Phillips's Another World in 1965. I recognized the name right away. Grant broke barriers as a black woman on Broadway in the 1970s. She penned, "Don't Bother Me, I Can't Cope," and "Your Arms Are Too Short to Box with God." Grant died in 2021. She was also from the south side of Chicago and knew my grandparents. For me, a soap lover, to find out about this connection, wowed me. So I called my mother to share my discovery about Grant's time on Another World.
Okay, tell me about Mickey Grant.
Well, Mickey Grant was, well, her whole family and my family, they were family friends. We had some mutual relatives, but they were like family, but not.
Wait, what do you mean mutual relatives? What does that mean?
Well, I had cousins like Harriet was, well, she was kin to, or she, they were kin to Leroy. Had Mickey Grant's sister. Yeah, and then...
This is what happens, you start asking Black people to explain who you're related to.
They were family friends, and we did share some relatives. Mickey Grant's father was related to a mutual cousin, the Kenny Brews.
Before Broadway, Grant joined Another World on NBC in 1965.
This was a big deal. You know, it was always like, when I was coming along, there were a lot of firsts for Blacks in television. And when the community heard about it, you know, we always made a point of watching that show because we wanted to support our entertainers.
For 7 years, Mickey Grant played an attorney named Peggy Nolan. In this 2016 interview, Grant talks about her soap experience with playwright and actress Charlene Woodard.
It was not written for a Black person in particular.
Ah.
And I tell people all the time, it doesn't matter how big the part is, give it your all, because you don't know what will happen as a result. It was the fact that I was going off and doing all these shows out of town. You did the show wherever you could. And then they called my agent to ask for me. And she said, well, she's out in Washington, D.C. doing something. Well, we want her for the show. Well, she can't sit around waiting for you to call.
Come on.
So what if we offered her a contract?
Grant said she left Another World to do her own writing. In 1968, Agnes Nixon, Phillips's protege, created One Life to Live. She seized the chance to be bold from jump. Nixon grew up in segregated Nashville, and in her autobiography wrote about the evils of racial prejudice that disturbed her as a child. Nixon channeled that anger into an inaugural storyline on her new soap. She borrowed inspiration from the mother-daughter characters in Imitation of Life, an emotional movie about the complexities of racial identity.
Are you happy here, honey? Are you finding what you really want?
I'm somebody else. I'm white. White.
A white character named Carla Gray was engaged to a white doctor. At the same time, a Black character named Sadie was the head of housekeeping at the hospital. She ended up being Carla's, whose real name was Clara, mother. Turns out Carla was not white, but a light-skinned Carla passing for white. The actress who played Carla was a Black woman named Ellen Holly. Once Carla was outed as Black, she moved on to a romantic relationship with a Black resident at the hospital. Nixon got a letter from a man in Seattle that said he wanted to protest the white girl kissing that Black resident. But he was also confused. If she turns out to be Black, he wanted to protest her kissing the white doctor. Funny how racism can be confusing. Carla eventually married a Black police officer named Ed Hall in the 1970s. He was played by the late Al Freeman Jr. Fun fact, they adopted a child who was played by Lawrence Fishburne. After the break, we hear from two current and former daytime actors.
I want to know, how did you end up on Days?
Well, I've been an actor for a while.
This is Emmy Award-winning actor James Reynolds. He's been playing Abe Carver on Days of Our Lives since 1981. He's currently the longest-running Black contract actor in soaps.
My agent had mentioned that there was a couple of soaps, actually, that wanted to know if I was available for a couple of roles. The roles were not good. I'm sorry, trying to think of a better way of saying it. Anyway, they were pretty racist, I thought. The names of the characters were really unfortunate. I think one was called Kong, and the other was just not something that I wanted to involve myself in. And I won't mention the shows, but they were very popular shows at the time. And Days of Our Lives came up, and truthfully, my agent had mentioned that they really didn't want to see me. They'd seen a lot of people, and for whatever reason, they didn't. And then finally, she persuaded them to see me. You know, you have those moments where everything just goes right. So their minds were changed. They did some rewrites. Literally, I was to be on set about 4 days later. And the next day, they delivered a stack of scripts. The one question I was asked is, can you memorize lines quickly? And I said, yeah, sure. And I could. So a day later, I was faced with this huge stack of scripts and started to tackle them.
Now Reynolds plays Abe Carver. In the fictional town of Salem, Illinois, Abe goes from rookie police officer to police commissioner to mayor.
He has often been called the moral center of Salem and of Days of Our Lives. He always wants to do the right thing, always tries to do the right thing, doesn't always succeed, but few of us do. And but the effort is there, and he's the guy that people go to frequently for advice, to put the wrong right. But at the same time, his life is somewhat complicated, as characters on soaps have to be.
I'm a long time daytime watcher. ABC is the channel that I watched growing up. Mm-hmm. And I've noticed that the black male characters tend to be on the police force. Is that something that you have thought about and have any thoughts on?
Yeah, well, it's interesting. I mean, yes, it hasn't held true necessarily all the time. Christoph's character on Young the Restless was a businessman. But there were interesting stereotypical things that went on in the past, in the history of television in general. And I think part of that had to do with the fact that they were frequently law enforcement. Racism limits the way people think. I think there are frequently people who have good intentions, but don't know how to put those intentions into play in the right way. Now, it worked out well for me and for Abe's character, because the way the history of this character was presented, the fact that he came on as a part of Salem, not from the outside. He was part of the community. He had become a key member of two of the families in a way.
Can you talk some more about the past struggles and how you think things are different, you know, now or in recent years?
Yeah, well, you know, I often say, and this is just about being black, or I often refer to it as people of color, because the way characters and stories were handled in years past were very similar. If you were black, or if you were Hispanic or Asian, and I often say, and this is in life in general, we kind of live with 1,000 paper cuts. And no matter what the day brings, it brings another little paper cut there. And that was the case, I think, and is the case frequently in entertainment when it comes to characters of color. So there are things that are written, and certainly were written, for characters to do that just weren't possible, just didn't happen in life. And also, characters were asked to kind of suffer indignities that didn't look on the surface as if it was something that was wrong or difficult to adhere to, but was, you know, asked to take a back seat in certain instances that wasn't, that didn't enhance your character. It may have played well for other characters, white characters, but it didn't play well for your character. And potentially was not only embarrassing, but demeaning. one of the things that I've been grateful for is I've been listened to by the powers that be at the days from the beginning. There was a time when Abe was kind of getting a little left behind in the police department. You know, I felt, well, Abe's been there for a while now. He should be the captain, I think, at that time. And so, you know, went to talk to Al Rubin, who was then the producer of the show, and he completely agreed that, yeah, the reality would be that this very confident police officer would be the superior officer.
When you talk about the indignities, you know, I've wondered if there's an authenticity issue that comes up for actors, for yourself, or things that you have suggested, or your colleagues, like, you know what, that's like, let's throw some cultural spice in, or we wouldn't eat that, or say that, or hair.
Much more today than in the past. Our Ron Calavati, who writes the show, is very invested in cultural authenticity. So when Abe's daughter, Abe and Paulina's daughter, Paulina's Abe's current wife.
Oh, they, I didn't know they had a daughter.
Well, it's a little complicated, but sort of, kind of, but gets a little complicated, as soaps do. But when they got married, they approached the producers, the two actors, and said, you know, we should jump the broom, which is not necessarily always a modern day something that happens traditionally, but has traditionally been part of African-American wedding ceremonies. And you know, they said, absolutely, let's do that. And that's the kind of response that we get commonly these days, without question.
Come 1990, Reynolds had an opportunity to be on a game-changing new NBC show, the first black soap, Generations. He played Henry Marshall, the ice cream magnate.
Talk about leaving Days and going to Generations.
Well, at that time, my character wasn't being used a lot and wasn't being used well, and I wasn't happy about that. And that was just, you know, I don't have a great complaint about that, other than that was just the way it is. But as far as an actor, as far as I was concerned, I wasn't contributing. You know, you want to be creative. It's a creative art. And if you're not being creative, then something's being lost personally. So that was something that I felt personally. So when the offer came to leave and go to Generations, which was an NBC show as well, by the way, I thought it was a no-brainer. And fortunately, the show Days of Our Lives was very supportive of that.
Generations only lasted for 2 years. Reynolds returned to Days as the stalwart Abe Carver. And in 2018, Days of Our Lives ventured into a plot point that tapped into Black parental fear and nodded to Black Lives Matter. They took on police violence.
And that story was based on the shooting of young Black men. And Abe's son was shot by a police officer. A mistaken shooting because he was a young Black man who was in the wrong place at the wrong time, wearing a hoodie. It was a story that had repeated itself many times in reality. And Ron, in his great wisdom and creativity, made that his first major story as the head writer of Days of Our Lives. I was so appreciative of that and felt such a sense of responsibility, not only to him personally for choosing that and choosing Abe to be the vehicle to tell this story. It's sort of a combination of reality and dramatic storytelling that we've engaged more in and need to engage even more in today. And I think you'll see a lot of that.
Reynolds received overdue recognition.
Okay, wow.
Wow. Wow.
Amazing work. And the award for Outstanding Lead Actor goes to James Reynolds. That's Abe Carter, Days of Our Lives.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you to the Academy. I've got to tell you, that walk from my seat to this stage took a few seconds, but it was actually 37 years. I met a lot of people on that road. I want to thank a few, a very few, unfortunately, tonight. Three names to mention in the beginning: Al Freeman Jr., Darnell Williams, A. Martinez, the other actors of color in the last 45 years who won this award. Thank you.
Note that Reynolds acknowledged Al Freeman, the actor who played Police Chief Ed Hall decades earlier on One Life to Live, and Darnell Williams, who played Jesse and All My Children, one half of the super couple we heard about earlier. I sat down with Tamara Tooney while she was in Chicago starring in a play at the Goodman Theater. You may recognize her as the medical examiner from Law & Order SVU, or as Whitney Houston's mother in the movie about the singer. Tooney also is important to Black soap opera history. She joined As the World Turns in 1987 as Jessica Griffin.
Jessica Griffin was a, you know, very intelligent, driven, independent, strong Black woman. Her history was she hailed from the Bronx, New York, from humble beginnings. And because of her drive and her intelligence and the shoulders in which she stood, her parents, her ancestors, she was able to achieve what she was to achieve. So that's how she came into the world of Oakdale.
For a long time, Tooney was the only Black actor on contract on As the World Turns. You described Jessica as a strong Black woman and in being the only one for a lot of the time. Did you feel any burden of representation?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I remember when they introduced my family and they took my character back to the Bronx to visit my family.
Of course, this wasn't really the Bronx, but a set made to look like her family's home. Before the taping started, Tooney took a look at the set.
And though this family is working class, lower middle class, working class, The set was shabby and dirty and nasty.
After rehearsal, she asked the producer to come to set.
And I said, "What do you see?" And she said, "I'm not sure what you're asking." I said, "You have established this character as someone who basically made herself, built herself." I said, "But where do you think that came from? Where do you think that came from?" I said, "It came from her family." I said, "And her family would not live in a dirty house." I was like, "They may not have a lot. And some of their things may be, you know, worn and well used." I said, "But they're not dirty people." I was like, "So we need to clean this up." And she turned bright red.
By the time Tooney was out of hair and makeup, the set was pristine. Same furniture, but no trash or grease or dirt.
So that was just one example of having to be the voice and the only voice in the room.
A notable storyline was her relationship with Duncan, a white man. How did audiences respond to the interracial relationship between Jessica and Duncan?
It was mixed response, naturally.
I'm beginning to feel guilty about being without you over the holidays.
Well, you know I can get through anything as long as I know you're coming back.
Well, you can count on that.
Good. And I have something here for you to take back to New York for your family.
Oh, that was very thoughtful of you.
And something for you, but you can't open it till Christmas. That way, they'll be a part of it with you.
Thank you. I have something for you. Not to be open till Christmas morning.
She loved what the writers did because they sought to
challenge the quote-unquote liberal mindset of the people in that town. And the people who considered themselves open-minded and liberal and accepting were the ones questioning this relationship. And the questions were more passive-aggressive. You know, it wasn't burning a cross on Jessica's lawn or, you know what I mean? It was more insidious and more subtle. And it really made the white characters on the show, it question them while questioning this relationship.
One day, the writers pulled Tooney into a room to tell her about a letter they received.
Jessica was in a relationship with Roy, and that didn't work out. And Roy is a Black character. Jessica was in a relationship with Blake. Blake is a Black character. That didn't work out. But now she's in a relationship with the Scottish man, and this is the relationship that's held as successful. And why is that? Why is that? What are you saying? And my response to Bob Calhoun was, when you only have one Black character on the show, and they are the only ones that are quote unquote representing, I was like, then you really have to understand that what you say and do with that character speaks volumes. And until you have multiple Black characters on the show where you can show multiple stories of Black people, then you're always going to be held up to that kind of standard. You're always going to be questioned in this way. I was always telling the fans, because the writers do read the fan mail and they do, you know, they pay attention. I was like, write the show and tell them that you want to see more Black characters, not just one or two. Then, of course, if it's one or two, then if it's a male-female, then they're always the one to get together. You know what I mean? So it's just like, it was a constant conversation while I was on the show.
And how did the writers or the executive producers respond to that?
They accepted positively. And then eventually there did become more Black characters who were contract players, you know, instead of one or two.
Sometimes when Black actors speak up, the results come at a cost. In 2018, the late Chadwick Boseman gave the commencement speech at our alma mater, Howard University. The Black Panther star recounted getting a soap opera role. Boseman didn't name it, but as a true soap fan, I knew he was talking about All My Children.
You shoot the whole episode in one day with little to no time to prepare. Once I saw the role I was playing, I found myself conflicted. The role wasn't necessarily stereotypical. A young man in his formative years with a violent streak pulled into the allure of gang involvement. That's somebody's real story. Never judge the characters you play. That's what we were always taught. That's the first rule of acting. And any role play, honestly, can be empowering. But I was conflicted because this role seemed to be wrapped up in assumptions about us as Black folk. The writing failed to search for specificity. Plus, there was barely a glimpse of positivity or talent in the character, barely a glimpse of hope. I would have to make something out of nothing. I was conflicted. Howard had instilled in me a certain amount of pride, and for my taste, this role didn't live up to those standards.
After filming the first two episodes, executives called Boseman into their office. They told him how great he was. That was his opening to express dismay about the character and backstory. They thanked him for his concerns. Shortly afterward, Boseman said he was fired. He was replaced with the younger Michael B. Jordan. After the break, we talked to two Black soap writers and about Young and the Restless. An actress there spoke up about race.
Basically, I always knew that I wanted to write for soap.
This is Jamie Giddens, and he does just that for Days of Our Lives.
So I grew up in a small town in Texas, and I was raised by my maternal grandparents. And so, as you can imagine, in Black households, the stories were on every day, like 5 days a week. And my grandparents started their soap day with The Young and the Restless on CBS. And then they switched to NBC for the rest of the day. Those were the soaps that I inherited from my grandparents. Santa Barbara being the first that I, of course, was able to start watching from the beginning because it, you know, debuted in 84.
Giddens has been at Days since 2020. Before we get into his career, I want to talk about what he did earlier, a blogger and a podcaster. He created Daytime Confidential. Giddens had been a journalist and used that sensibility to do soap journalism. As I mentioned, Young and the Restless has been the top-rated soap for Black viewers. It's not just because of Victor Newman. The soap had Black characters with front-burner storylines. Neil, Drusilla, Olivia, and Malcolm. The quartet was especially hot in the 1990s. Victoria Ryle played Drusilla and was very outspoken about her soap and sister soap Bold and the Beautiful, about the lack of Black people behind the camera, writers, hairstylists, makeup artists. Ryle even filed a lawsuit in 2015 against the studios and producers, alleging retaliation and not being rehired after she left the soap. The defendants denied her allegations in the lawsuit. It was settled 2 years later. As a podcaster, Giddens was on top of this.
You know, Victoria had been speaking out about those things for a full decade before Black women in primetime and film started speaking out, and she was blackballed. She was blackballed. She was written off as difficult and, you know, was pretty much frozen out of the industry. Different people have different perspectives on that, but having covered the genre and seen people who are quote-unquote difficult come and go on these shows over and over and over and over again, it's not lost on me that she was sort of shown the door never to be brought back. Did Vicky speaking out probably help shine a light on the fact that, yes, you know, this genre is watched by 40% Black women?
Let's take a moment here to talk about this statistic. In March 2024, CBS announced development of a Black soap opera called The Gates. It's a joint venture with the NAACP, and the show will be led by pioneering soap writer Michelle Bonjean, a Black woman. The news was shocking. A new soap? A core Black family? In an interview, the president and CEO of CBS said, quote, "One of the things that the data made very clear to both of us is that daytime soap operas over-index with Black women. And yet when you look at soap operas, it's usually sort of a white-led family with supporting characters that reflect more of our society. So we just thought, wouldn't it be interesting to flip that and make the core anchor family a Black family and then make the other characters reflect more the broader scope of society," end quote. Beyond the Gates debuted in February of this year. This means 5 soaps are on the air. So many of us soap fans are excited to watch. We're fans of Valjean and the genre, but this new soap makes us feel seen in a way and not taken for granted. By the way, Tamara Tooney plays the matriarch. I didn't know that when I interviewed her.
I recently heard from a friend that a longtime executive producer basically said, you know, that's a known, that's a given. They know that Black people are the largest audience for daytime, but it's basically Black people will watch white people, but white people won't watch Black people.
Back on Days of Our Lives, Giddens was able to write A Juneteenth Wedding, the one James Reynolds mentioned earlier in the episode.
I have been given sort of a wide berth to write, you know, certain vernacular and certain flavor into the characters of Paulina and Chanel and Jada. You know, I love when I'm able to do that. One of the first things when I joined the show, they had just had the character of Lonnie slap Paulina, and I was able to say, "Oh, we don't do that. We don't hit our mamas now." You know, and it, you know, just as a cultural thing, it's like, no, we don't hit our mamas, you know, because that's such a daytime thing, you know, Kendall and Erica Kane. And I mean, you know, as a Black woman, you know, Black women all across the world are looking at like, oh, no, you just hit your mama.
But at times, you felt in the early days of soap operas with Black families, there was a little bit of the respectable Negro. Like, there was, like, the family had to mind all its P's and Q's and be a really honorable, perfect, respectable family to be accepted.
That's former General Hospital writer Shannon Peace. She considered big and small moments, too, from the racist criminal justice system to a Romare Bearden painting gifted to a character.
The entire time that I was in that writer's room, I made a conscious effort to push for continued representation and visibility and diversity, and not just for our Black characters, but for, you know, our Asian characters, for one of our trans characters, and in terms of her having a, you know, a relationship and making sure that we continue to push and try to get that onto the screen. I thought that was important.
There's a popular young Black woman named Trina on General Hospital. Spencer, a young white man, had feelings for her. The dastardly Esme was jealous. Esme is white. Peace said this was not first and foremost a race story, but there were racial implications when Esme targeted Trina.
So I wrote some scenes between Trina's mother, Portia, played by Brooke Kerr, and Trina's aunt, Stella, played by Vernay Watson, in which they discuss the inherent sort of racism and the bias in the legal system, and also the fact that Esme targeted a young Black woman without regard for the fact that she would face a stiffer penalty.
That girl targeted Trina because she's Black?
Esme, I loved the way it came out. I will say, at first, there was talk of not including it, and my head writers, to their credit, really fought to make sure that that conversation was in there. And then I was then told, not only can the conversation be in that episode, you can even lean more into it. So I went crazy and like wrote as much as I could.
And Trina was framed as the criminal, to face the criminal justice system. In the midst of everything that's been going on in this world, in this country, everywhere, Esme had to know the ramifications of that kind of an action, that Trina would have a harder time with it. People can pretend that it's not real, but that's exactly what they're doing. They're pretending.
Peace grew up watching soaps with her mother. She's been the only Black person in the writer's room during her career, sometimes swatting away off-color comment, sometimes advocating for Black authenticity. But she lands at the same conclusion.
Daytime still really suffers a problem, not with the fact of the representation. You see the faces. They're there. They're quote-unquote on contract. But what are the storylines? Why do we still feel often like they're being backgrounded or they're being support staff to prop other characters or other families? And when I say other characters or other families, I mean white characters or white families. That is, to me, the issue in daytime. That's the biggest difference between daytime and primetime. I don't feel that in primetime. I feel in primetime, for the most part, they've done away with the Black sidekick or the Black friend, Black best friend. And you have Black characters in meaningful, front-facing roles that are driving story. I don't see that in daytime.
For Jamie Giddens, a Black queer writer, he gives props to Agnes Nixon. Even if the genre is behind on race, she was pioneering.
Agnes, I guess, just didn't give a damn because, you know, for her entire career, she was pushing the envelope. You know, I mean, she introduced the Black characters on The Guiding Light, if I have my history right. I think she was the one who wrote in Ruby Dee and Ossie Davis. And then when she had her own shows, she always pushed for Black and brown characters, and not just that form of diversity. I mean, she gave Erica Kane a gay daughter. She had Stuart Chandler fall in love with an HIV-positive woman. You know, she just did it.
On the next episode, Agnes Nixon does it again, pushing the envelope on queer representation. Stories Without End is a production of WBEZ Chicago and part of the NPR network. I'm your host and writer, Natalie Moore. The show is produced by Hina Srivastava and edited by Ariel Van Cleve. It's mixed by Haley Bloomquist. We had music and production assistance from Justin Bull and Dave Miska. Thanks to Brennan Banizak. Our executive producer is Tracy Brown. Mickey Grant interview clips are from the Legacy Project series, presented by the Dramatists Guild Foundation.